Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Relationships Rule. You know, in today's business world, trust feels more fragile than ever. I actually really believe that. I think that so much has changed and we have to be, and I love that it's moving back around to that in a way, because it's about people and relationships, and we're coming back to that even in this world of AI. Teams are navigating change, uncertainty, and higher expectations. Yet many leaders are still relying on outdated models that prioritize control over connection. What if the real competitive advantage today is empathy? Well, I'm joined today by an expert in that field, Dr. Melissa Robinson-Weinmiller. She is an EQ expert, a TEDx speaker, and author of the book, The Empathic Leader. We explore how empathy is not a soft skill, but a strategic one, and how trust is built moment by moment through emotionally intelligent leadership. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank Melissa. You so much for having me, Janice. This is fantastic.
Oh, no, I'm excited. I mentioned before we went on air that I watched your TEDx talk, and I'm always in awe of people who actually do those. And yours was a brilliant story, and also really spoke to the importance of empathy. And I see, I don't know, this isn't even on my notes. I kind of see empathy, and I could be totally wrong, but I see it as a gift. I think people who are empathic or empathetic, I don't know which word to use now, empathic or empathetic. Anyway, empathic, I think I like that word better. I think that's a gift. I don't know, but is it a skill or
it's
not?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, it's both. There's some research that shows that we do have some biological hardwiring. You know, they start with like infants and seeing how when they're in like an ICU and there's a lot of infants together, when one starts crying, others will. It's yes. called emotional contagion. So it's the same okay. idea if you're in a room and or like at a sporting event and everybody's like, woo, and you feel that energy and that excitement. So it kind of starts there biologically, but it's also a skill, which means we can learn it and we can get better at it. So mm-hmm. I agree it's a gift, but I also think it's a gift you can give yourself.
Tell me about that.
Well, if it's not something that you have a talent for, I mean, right. like
it doesn't ooze out of you, right?
Right. Normally. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I mean, like for me, I am never going to have a talent for basketball, no matter what I do. I'm 5'3" if I really try and I'm just no good at it, but I could take whatever talent I did have and get better at it if I would practice.
Right.
You know, which as far as basketball is concerned, I'm not, but
right.
But same thing with empathy. I mean, you may not have a huge talent for it, but if you practice it and you do it over and over again, you're going to get better at it. So,
well, okay, but is it a matter of how you perceive things? So, you know how some people are numbers people and some people are words people, some people, mm-hmm. right? And some people are project oriented and some people are people oriented. So the same thing, how you look at people, do you look at them with that warm fuzzy of empathy, or do you look at them in a more, you know, matter of fact way?
Oh, that's such a good question.
I don't know where that came from, but that's okay. Go for it. I'm glad.
No, it's fantastic because it actually goes to the root of what I teach. Because a lot of times in society, when we think empathy, we think feelings. I feel what you feel. And that's one kind of empathy, but there's 43 different definitions of empathy.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. And that one that's about feeling, that's one of them, but it's not all of them. Empathy is about taking the perspective of the other person. And you can do that with feelings. You can do that through thoughts. You can do that. Talk about empathy with nature. Talk about somatic empathy, where like you physically think, you know, feel what they're feeling. So if your style is more cerebral, there is something called cognitive empathy, which is I logically understand your situation, your feeling, where you're at. I just don't feel anything. You know, there's different ways to approach this. So just not being a warm fuzzy doesn't mean you don't have empathy or that you shouldn't have empathy.
Ooh, that's interesting. I would never think of somebody who's not a warm fuzzy having empathy. So I guess that opens things up in the sense of defining empathy in a business context, because not everybody at the top in the leadership positions are that way inclined or feel or seem that way, right? So
right.
I'm going to read this question because it's two parts. Many leaders still equate authority with control. What shifts when a leader moves from command and control to connection and collaboration? So I'm sensing that the authority, the control is what that type of person at the helm is seen as not empathic and not warm fuzzy, right? So could they still be, and how does that look?
Oh, they absolutely could be. So when you're thinking of a command and control style of leadership, that kind of goes back to like a managerial approach to leadership, where you look at the organization as a machine and the people are cogs, which means that if they're broke, they're broke, in the air quotes, they need to be fixed. And that means pulling cogs out and putting cogs in and hammering it into whatever you need it to be. And that kind of command and control doesn't allow for the fact that things move, they evolve, they grow, they contract, they do all these different things. So as long as you keep that kind of ham-fisted authoritarian control on organizations, you're not actually giving room to grow. The best you can hope for is to keep it clicking along. And that's not going to happen forever. Whereas if you move more to an empathic style of leadership, one that, you know, leans towards servant leadership or transformational leadership or some of these other things, now you're looking at the organization as an organism. It's going to grow. It's going to get bigger. It's going to get smaller. The components and the different systems within are going to change it. The thing is a machine cannot evolve, but an organism can. And especially in this age of AI and tech and everything that's going on, we have got to be able to evolve or become extinct.
It's so true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's just back up for a second. So when I listened to your and watched your TED talk, you talk about the three kinds of empathy, or you say there's 43 types, but the three base, I guess the three main ones, right?
Yep. They're the three that I pull out specifically for leadership. Yeah.
Okay. So tell us about those and how.
So the first one is emotional empathy. And that is that I feel what you feel. And that's the one that's usually fast. It's instinctive. You know, the people that do it well, like just look and they know, you know, they read people really well.
Yes.
It's they can
high
walk
intuitive,
in.
highly intuitive. Yeah.
Yeah, precisely. So that's more the emotional side. The cognitive side is the logical. I don't necessarily understand your feelings, but I can see the situation and understand it. And it's slower. It's iterative. Usually you're thinking about it. You're kind of sussing out the situation. It's going to be a lot more, you know, the engineering types and the mathematical and the numbers people, where you can really get a hold of what's going on, but there's no real feelings involved.
No, I don't get those people. So I do understand. I can recognize them.
Yeah. Physicians sometimes fall into this, which is funny because they're in a field that has so much empathy in it.
Yes.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But leaders, especially, they if they can get a hold of that, they can help get away from empathy fatigue and empathy burnout. But anyway, there's those two. And then the third that I talk about is self-empathy. Because we have a lot of these people in these leadership positions that are really driven, they're motivated, they're smart, they're high self-actualizing, but they don't necessarily make great leaders because they've never been taught to be great leaders. They get into these positions because they bring in the most sales or they have the best clients or the best technician. So now they're in this position where they're expected to step up and do something that maybe they haven't done before, and all those smarts work against them because that's where imposter syndrome comes in.
I was just going to say the Peter principle comes into effect. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. And without that self-empathy to be able to say, yeah, I am a gunner, but this isn't necessarily my niche. Yeah, I'm a fantastic technician, but I'm going to have the self-awareness to understand that now I'm leading.
other people and when they're not like me. Yes.
Right, exactly. And that's where that self-empathy comes in, being able to understand your awareness and where you fit into all this, and not bring in the man, I'm so stupid. I really messed that up. I can't make this happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And so many people that are, on that path, like I don't want to talk too much about corporate, but the sense of people, whether it's on the path for success on your own or in a big organization, you're so focused and have blinders on about that that sometimes these other things don't get taught or even being aware of them, because they're things that will make you a better leader anyway if you take those into consideration. I watch my daughter in she's in corporate America, actually, even though I'm Canadian, she's in corporate America, and she's got a big job now, and it's hard because she's having to make that jump to be that leader. And there's things you have to learn along the way that she probably hasn't yet. So having a coach to help her is really actually helping her. So I don't know, I couldn't do it. It's too, I'm, I could never work for anybody else. I was a teacher in my first life and I loved that, but it got very bureaucratic and I didn't like that. So yeah, I could never have done what she does. Anyway, okay, let's move on. I know that, okay, this is interesting. Well, I don't know this, so I'm not going to say that. Okay. First of all, can you share a story, either from your own experience or clients, where empathy transformed trust within a team?
Absolutely.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because that's one of the big things that empathy does. It creates those connections which foster trust. So I had a director that I was working with. I tend to actually work a lot with middle management
Okay.
because, they have the ability to lead both up and down, and usually
Mm-hmm.
they're young enough to see that the way things are going are not going well, and they don't want to just fall into that same old command and control model.
Got it.
And so this guy knew he was walking in, and of course, these people were like, well, we want you to change the culture. Never mind, that culture comes down from the top and they're expecting him to change this from the middle.
Yeah.
But he was like, I have no idea what to do with this. I'm coming in as an interim. They expect me to fix this quickly. What should I do? And I'm like, you've got to start with your people. You have got to create a know, like, and trust factor with them because they've been there for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. They're going to be your best resource, but they're not going to be a resource if they don't trust you.
Right.
So it's like your job is to go in, and every day I want you to make your rounds, which means
Yeah.
I wanted him to go out and just walk down to the water cooler in the core and see his people and say, how's it going? And walk back 20
Yeah.
minutes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, plus it means he got to get up from his computer
Yeah.
because leadership burnout is a thing.
Mm
So that was it. Did not want him to do, hours and hours, just so they know your face. They know you care. They start to trust you. And what happened was within a matter of weeks, people started coming to him for ideas to correct inefficiencies, things that they had come to the previous guy before, but he just kind of didn't want to hear it, or they were scared to talk to him because the only
Mm-hmm.
time he came out of his office, they thought everybody's getting fired.
Yeah.
So they took
So
the
there was
time.
no liaison. There was no showing interest in his staff at all. So in this case, that made the huge difference. See the people, see them, right?
Right. And understand their people.
Yes.
These
Yeah.
are they're not cogs, they're people. They're not inputs, they're people. And that's all it took because they did start to come to him. Because they started to trust him, their productivity got better. When he walked in, he had employee engagement scores like in the mid-70s. By the time he finished up this interim thing, which became full time, they were up in the 90s.
Oh, that's
Because they
cool.
actually trusted him. They weren't worried about getting the rug yanked out from underneath them all the time. And his center actually showed a profit.
Interesting. So that made me think of another question. And I don't want it to sound sexist. I'm very curious. Does it, it could be the exact opposite than what I was thinking, but do women have the same, or different, experience or excuse me one second experience or is it easier or not for them on the emotional side? Or are women having to work harder to get to those levels that it's harder for them to even think about that? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And actually, that's really good insight because there's, in my experience, there's a little bit of both. I mean, there are those that do come in with a little more emotional agility, you know, into these positions. But unfortunately, because it is a male dominated world,
yes,
a lot of them do kind of try to outman the men, which means they actually go to the other side.
Yes, right? That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so do they come for help more easily? Or do they know that they're being like that? Because I would think that, I don't know. I think that might be harder for them to see that they're being like that.
Yes. In my experience, it is for two reasons. I mean, one is because they've already bought into this idea of this is how I need to be to excel.
Yeah.
And if they've excelled, then it's showing that at least to some degree it's working.
Yeah.
You know, and the other side of that too is just that even if they change the way they are, they're still in the same culture. So if
yes.
you're in a culture that isn't going to foster that, it's going to be really hard to make those kind of changes.
Yeah, interesting. Can you think of like a company where they're a great example of empathic leaders?
You know, the one I bring up, and this one, it's a little dated, but I don't think so much, was Tony Hsieh and Zappos.
Oh,
how
right.
he had his kindness first philosophy.
Yes.
And, you
I
know,
wrote
he
that
was,
book. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what he did with that company and actually being able to create a corporate structure around it was amazing. And
But it
he
was a
showed
sad
that.
story. You know, in the end, it was a sad story, right? Didn't he commit suicide? Yeah.
I don't remember if
Oh.
it was suicide or not, but the stuff he was doing definitely killed him.
Okay. Oh, right. Okay. Right. Anyway, okay. But yeah, I remember that. That was quite the story at the time. Yeah. Okay. So what would you say are the small, you might have answered this already. What would you say are the small daily behaviors that either build trust or slowly erode it?
The big one is being visible and actually showing that you're walking the talk. You know, when you're in a leadership position, I mean, as a musician for a long time, so I tend to think of things in these terms,
Okay.
but you are always on stage.
Okay.
Someone is always watching. Someone is always seeing what you're doing, and your culture happens there. I mean, it doesn't matter how much you want to pound a culture into place. If you're not living that culture, it's not going to happen. So as a leader, if your behaviors actually say, yes, I'm trying to get to know these people. I can't know everybody's name. I can't know everybody's family, but at least I'm being visible. They know who I am. I at least kind of know it vaguely which departments they're in. You know, now you're actually setting the tone for what's happening. For instance, I was working with a upper level C-suite person, and he made sure that on the name tags, they had the first name in big letters so that he could read it from across the room, and the second name in small ones, just so that he could call people by name. And it was a small thing, and it isn't like his people didn't know exactly what was going on, but it's the principle of the thing that he's making this attempt, you know, and that's what's going to build your culture, one person and one action at a time. And eroding it is the exact opposite. If you say my mission, vision, and values are based on empathy, and then you don't show it at all, people are going to be like, yeah, right. Okay, sure thing.
Right. Okay, that brings me to this, I think, interesting question that I sort of, I don't know. Okay. How can leaders tell the difference between genuine empathy and what one might call performative empathy?
It's a question of where your focus is.
Okay.
If your focus is on yourself and what can I get out of this?
Ooh.
Performative empathy. If your focus is on the other person and taking their perspective, there's curiosity involved. Understanding who they are and where they're coming from, that's real empathy.
And that's my favorite word, curiosity. My audience hear me say that all the time. And so I love that because it's true, because your focus is on the other person and you're showing that by asking them questions about them. It comes from the right place, I think. At least I know, I think it does. So I love that. Thank you. So sometimes leaders worry that empathy may make them look weak if they are empathic. How do you address that misconception?
Well, I go back to definitions because they do. I actually get that objection a lot. And
okay.
it's like, okay, so what's your definition of empathy? Well, if the definition is it's all feelings and puppies and rainbows. Well, then yeah, I mean, we're not running the Care Bears here. You know,
right.
it's a business and a business has to run.
Yeah.
But if your definition of empathy is taking perspective and understanding where the other person is at, there's nothing soft about that. And in fact, it takes courage because you're willing to see it through the other person's eyes. So, you know, I think we really need to understand what it is first.
Yeah, and accept it.
Yes.
Right? And that meaning of it. Okay. I have to ask, you mentioned this already. I know that you played the French horn.
Yeah, I
and that
did.
to me, that's a big instrument and pretty powerful kind of instrument. So, do you still use analogies about music? And how did you go from like music to this multiple degrees and studying in school and then to become this expert in EQ from that? Like,
It was a
you were a
wild
professor,
ride.
weren't you? You were a professor of French horn. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm totally impressed. Anyway.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's been a wild ride for sure. Yeah, I mean, I do use music analogy if I think people are going to understand it. I mean, one of the ones that I like is this idea of a conductor in an orchestra, right? Because you have the conductor and they're up there as the leader and they're doing all these wonderful things and they're visible and they're the ones that the crowd sees. But I have seen an orchestra, when something happens to the conductor, finish an entire symphony by themselves without a leader. And I have also seen conductors practicing where they're in front of a mirror and there's like nobody there. So the orchestra is able to survive without the conductor. Not as well, not with the same vision and strategy, but the conductor has a real hard time surviving without an orchestra. And I think leadership is the same. You know, the two
Beautiful.
are better with each other,
Yes.
but they are, you know, there is a difference there than what people think. The orchestra can survive just fine without that conductor, at least to a certain degree.
So I have to ask you, oh, sorry, were you finished? I apologize.
Yeah, no,
Okay.
that's fine.
So I have to ask you then. So I think of musicians, again, it could be a cliche and one shouldn't do this, but I think of musicians as being what I would say as numbers people, math people. It's all about patterns and numbers and so on. And if they're a good musician, they also feel the music, of course, and they have both sides. But when I think of them being people like being leaders, empathic leaders, as your book is called, then they're not usually that kind of person. It's just me making things up in my head. But can you speak to that? Like, did you have any, were you interested in, like, how did you get to that place where you went and studied empathy and you know, I guess it's psychology and people and all those things. And
Yeah. Well, I'll circle back to that one about the musicians first, because
Okay.
I think that's a really cool point. But the way I got from here to there was not a straight line. I mean,
Which
because
is
I
good.
love, yeah. Well, I've learned a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I loved music. I had done it from the time I was young. It's like all I wanted to do. I got to do some really cool stuff because of it. I mean, I got to play with Ray Charles, and I got to play with Time Steamroller, and I got to travel and do things that otherwise just probably wouldn't have happened,
Sure.
you know. But it's not very stable, just gigging. So went, got the first doctorate, went to actually get a tenure track French horn professorship, which there's not a lot of them.
No. I wouldn't think so.
No. So I ended up, you know, heading a long way from home. And within my first term, I was assaulted by one of my colleagues. And even though that was not good, I mean, it was bad and it was hard. The hardest part was everything that happened after that, where I was trying to talk to people and I was trying to say, look, this isn't right. And I'm not the only one. People that do this don't do it once.
Right.
You know, it's a pattern of behavior. And like when I went to the chair of my department, I was told as junior female faculty, if I was stirring up trouble, I was never going to get promoted. Well, I didn't care about tenure. I just wanted to feel safe.
Yeah.
You know, when I went to the dean, I was told if I didn't like it, I could leave. Well, there aren't a lot of French horn professorships. Where was I going to go? I had transplanted myself all the way across the country. So this basically went on for, you know, 7 years until
Oh my
I
goodness.
denied tenure, which isn't really a shock.
Yeah.
And I ended up having to leave that area altogether and went to try and start a new life. And then COVID happened after that. So the music field kind of imploded on itself in a lot of ways.
Right.
But I couldn't quit chewing on this idea of what had happened, because a lot of people that I tried to talk to, whether it was in HR or the union or the ombuds or, you know, these different people, for the most part, they weren't bad people. You know, they wanted to make connection. They wanted to understand, but the system had them so squeezed,
Yeah.
so tight that they couldn't hear it. It was, you keep
They're
the status
afraid
quo.
for themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And who can blame them? You
Right.
know, they have to take care of themselves and their family.
Yeah.
And so I kept trying to figure out, you know, what had gone wrong. And at this point, I was doing some consulting with my husband, and we were doing small medical type businesses. And I kept seeing the same patterns of these people in leadership, that they weren't bad people, but somehow it's like once that intersection of leadership and you know, finance happened, profit, so for some reason, the empathy just shut off. And I was like, I don't understand what's going on, but I want to find out, because this has the potential to really change the face of leadership and do a world of good for everybody. And, you know, not just leadership. I mean, I see this as a societal thing as well. It's something that we could all learn from and do better with, and, you know, come out of the last 10 or 20 or 30 years better than we went into it. So that's kind of how I got here. And then it seems like the deeper I got in, the deeper I got in.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I think the timing is like perfect right now. I mean, your country couldn't be going through anything worse in terms of all of this right now. And having some empathy and being able to stand up for yourself might be a good thing, you know, in the long run, without getting into politics. But it's hard not to these days, right?
It is.
It totally is. All right. So I thank you for sharing that. I know that it shaped you in a big way, and it's also made you, though, I think, I perceive that it has made you a better person and allowed you to understand what other people are going through when you're teaching them these kinds of things, and what they might be trying, you know, blocking out or not doing because of fear and because of things like that. So, yeah, very. Oh, and there's one other thing, actually. I've got a star here that I wanted to say, because I think it's something I've been told many times over my years, and I'm much better than I used to be, I think. But what this note says here is empathy and judgment cannot exist in the same space. And I used to be my kids still say I'm judgmental, but I used to be much more judgmental than I think I am now. And I think my empathy level has definitely gone up. But, you know, I think that's a great statement. Talk to me about it a little bit from your perspective.
Yeah. So the second we enter into judgment, it's kind of the same thing as the difference between empathy and sympathy, right? Like we were talking earlier, is the focus on you or is the focus on them?
Right.
When you're looking at another person and their situation and what they're dealing with or what they're feeling or what they're going through, if you're looking at them through your own eyes, automatically you're making a comparison, not because you're a bad person, because that's what we as human beings do. And the second you make that comparison, you're judging, because one is going to come out higher or lower than the other. Again, not because we mean bad, just because that's
no,
what
we mean we're trying to help, we think.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
But we're seeing it through our own eyes.
Okay.
And
there's
that's
a
why you
difference.
know that if judgment is there, you're not feeling empathy, because the only way to really feel empathy is through their eyes. Well, if you're only looking at the world through their eyes, you're not going to judge it because there's nothing to compare it to. You're just seeing what it is. You're in the feeling. It's what Brené Brown calls being in the suck. It's
Yeah.
the same kind of thing. And the really cool piece of that is that empathy and judgment cannot exist in the same place, whether that's empathy for another person or empathy for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that was a big one, actually. I'm glad I talked about that because that actually is helpful for people like me to think about that. Am I thinking of it from my perspective, which is not helping them at all, or am I thinking of it from their perspective? And it's totally different. I like that. I love when I learn something, like the light bulb goes on. Okay, last question around this. If every leader listening today committed to strengthening one empathy-based habit, what would you suggest it be?
Start to integrate this idea of cognitive empathy. Get away from this idea that empathy is all feeling and start to make friends with the idea that it's okay to not feel when you take the other person's perspective. And the way I actually put this to leaders is I always want them to keep a cool head and a warm heart.
Oh, I love that. Keep a
Thank
cool
you.
head and a warm heart. That's lovely. Thank you. That was really good. Okay, just a couple of quick questions just for fun. Do you like to take in your information by reading, by watching, by listening? Just curious.
All of them.
Okay.
I do a lot of reading because of the articles and stuff that I read, but like at night I can't wait to throw on an audiobook. I mean, I'm still a musician at heart, so if I'm hearing, that's what I
Yes.
like, you
Okay.
know.
What do you listen to these days, music-wise?
Music-wise, I've been going back. So I'm kind of half and half. I have some really eclectic tastes. So I've been re-listening to some of the Richard Strauss symphonies because they have such great French horn lines.
Oh,
I
I would
mean,
know that. No, just kidding.
it's just this
Okay.
big. So his father, a quick music trivia, his father was the lead French hornist in a different orchestra. So when he wrote all these pieces, there's like, oh, this big swoopy John Williams film score sounding
Yes.
French horn stuff. And
Okay.
I love it. And then I've been
Oh.
going back to my 80s roots and I've been listening to some Devo lately.
Oh, that's cute. I love it.
So
Okay. That's fun. Do you still play?
I do. Not as much as I used to, but a little bit. Yeah.
Is a French horn similar to a euphonium or not?
No.
No.
Well, they're
Okay.
both brass,
Yes.
but French horn is considered high brass. Euphonium is low brass.
Like my ex-father-in-law used to play the euphonium in a band, and I remember that from years ago. And it was, yeah, but I didn't know much about it, so that's why I asked. Okay, I think this has been so much fun. I thank you for your time. It's also been very informative, and I do hope that if my audience, I'm talking to you now, if you like what you heard, please reach out and check out Dr. Melissa Robinson Weinmiller and her work. Her book, The Empathic Leader, can be found.
Amazon, Barnes and Noble,
Perfect.
all the usuals, and the audiobook just came out. So
Oh,
if that's
fantastic.
a listener,
did you re record it yourself?
I did.
Oh,
Yep.
fun. Okay, I would love to do that someday. I love reading aloud. Okay, so just a little wrap up. Trust is not built through policies or position. It is built through presence, consistency, and empathy. And as Dr. Melissa shared, the leaders who thrive in today's business landscape are those who understand that relationships are the true currency of success. When we lead with empathy, we create stronger teams, deeper trust, and better results for everyone. We need to care in this world today, and we all need that that we need empathy. We need empathy and trust. And I'm thinking about how we teach children that these days too. So
Yeah.
anyway, yeah. So I will put how to find you in the show notes, and thank you again. Thank you to my audience. Any last words?
I guess just to remember to keep a cool head and a warm heart.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much, and remember to stay connected and be remembered. Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener, because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.